When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
April Fool's Day was not kind to the Tampa Bay Rays or the Tampa Bay Lightning. Kind of a double dip of despair, if you will, those two teams losing. You know, the Rays, Steve, I think we're starting to see a pattern here that's alarming. It's still early, but it can get late early, as we know. And that is, we worried about their starting pitching. I mean, they obviously lost so many players to injury and whatnot. It's the walks. You know, every guy they start has not thrown strikes. And it was Ryan Pepiot's, you know, turn the other night against the Texas Rangers. And I know this about the Rangers. If you just keep letting guys get on base, eventually what's going to happen is what happened. They're going to hit a home run. And when you get behind every single night, which is what it feels like the games that they've lost, it's hard to come back. You know, the pitching staff now has walked 26, and that breaks the record set by, wait for it, the 99 Devil Rays in allowing 29 runs for a 5.60 ERA in just 45 innings. Yikes.
That is a big yikes. Now, nothing frustrates me more than walks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let them hit it out of the park. What's the difference? I'd rather give up a solo shot then walk two and let them hit a three-run shot.
Which heck yeah, every day of the week.
Happened mm-hmm. in the first inning tonight with
Pepiot.
You know, throw strikes. Like, mm-hmm. If you get beat, you have a bad night, you get beat, okay.
Like, yeah.
Don't give it to them free.
Right.
But, so, the Rays, you know, some records, as you said, the amount of runs and that. They're playing two good teams with two good lineups.
No question.
Which is part of it. And you've got young pitchers. Pepiot, who said nerves tonight. Mm-hmm. Tyler Alexander didn't look good on Sunday.
Right.
Eflin rolled through the first five innings and fell apart in the sixth. Okay, that happens. They looked actually pretty good, Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday, they played
pitched
well.
They pitched well.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be piecing this together. I don't know how they're going to get it done. But they don't have enough starting pitching. We know that. We've all said it, and you can sit there and say, oh, the Rays always figure it out, and they might, and I'd probably, you know, put money on it if I was a betting man. But I think early in this season, it is going to be a mix and match, and it's going to look ugly at times, like it did tonight, and it did on Sunday. It's just going to be that way until they figure out who they can put where, and until they hopefully start getting some guys back. Taj Bradley, hopefully early May, and then start the line of pitchers after that, which is kind of your reinforcements. I think they've got a lot of figuring out of who can we rely on, who can we trust, who needs openers in front of them, and then who those openers can be too. Because like we said, Armstrong didn't look good on Sunday as an opener. You know, so it's going to be a work in progress. It's weird to see the Rays under 500, as this is the first time they've been under 500 since April 18th of 2022. Almost 2 years ago was the last time this team was under 500. Of course, last year they started 13-0. It helps. But this first month is going to be, it's going to be very telling for this team, what they figure out and how they piece this together. Because they're shorthanded in the pitching staff.
Yeah, and they don't have the kind of offense. I don't think they're deep enough to come back. No one's deep enough to give up three-run homers in the first inning. You know, that's just not the way you start a game. But, you know, they've started at the plate. In the games they've lost, they've started slow as well, mm-hmm. without many hits through five, through six, that kind of thing.
Well, 29 runs through five games. There's very few offenses that are going to beat that consistently.
No doubt.
You know, they've got to pitch better.
Yeah, no, it starts with starting pitching, and that was what everybody pointed, including the Rays, as the thing that had to come around. And at times, at least when they've gotten behind and they've kind of put in their B bullpen, even the bullpen has let them down with control. You know, they've struggled too throwing the ball. I guess it was what Maton did, kind of was all over the place as well. So it's, you know, you want to win more than you lose at home, obviously. But to your point, these are two pretty good teams to start the season off with back to back. You know, Toronto and the Texas Rangers are the world champions, and, you know, they can flash the rings and they've got the title. And then, you know, when this is over, maybe you get a little healthy on the road. At least they start at Colorado, which is, you know, has been for the last several years the worst, one of the worst teams in baseball. So maybe they get healthy out there, and we look at this a week from now and say, well, you know, sub 500 start, but they're right back, you know, in the thick of the American League East. It's just, it's such a marathon. But there are signs, and if these signs weren't the ones that existed all through spring training, you know, all through the off season when those starting pitchers got hurt, then you'd feel a little better about it, maybe. But it's correctable, you know. I don't remember the Rays walking batters. And one thing that they've always done is have strike throwers, you know, because they have a good defense. They got guys that can run behind them and field, you know. So that's, they're not playing their type of baseball, and they got to get back to it pretty quickly. And then they got to hope that they can withstand, you know, this first half of the season with guys like, you know, that running out there every 4 days.
Well, I think now, you know, the season started last week, but the season kind of starts now. Okay, every pitcher's had their one time through the order. Now you're getting your second start, and then it'll be your third start. And if Ryan Pepiot had nerves and Tyler Alexander's too pumped up or whatever, you know, now you're getting into week two of the season. And so now it's you're into your routine. And now let's see how those pitchers respond and what changes Kyle Snyder and the pitching staff comes up with to get them to throw strikes. You know, you and I have talked for years on this. Like, if you're having a bad night and you get beat, you get beat. But giving them the free passes, just, it frustrates me to no end.
Yeah, you don't give yourself a chance. And, you know, if they're big hitters, and let's be honest, I mean, you miss a Wander Franco, you know. I mean, you miss lengthening that lineup the way they have in the past. But if you're not getting it from a Rosarena, you know, and Yandy Diaz at the top of that order, you know, we know that Brandon Lau has it in him, but he's inconsistent. He'll carry you for a month. But if you're relying on him, you know, to hit you the grand slam like he did over the weekend, it's a tough way to live. And so, you know, those other guys can't have an off night, you know, and you credit some of the pitching that they faced at this early juncture. Some of those guys threw the ball really well, but by contrast, too many walks. I mean, it's just, that's an outrageous number of walks. There's nothing worse. Like, college baseball is known for that, where every count is 3-2, and, you know, you'll get 10 walks a game, 5 on each side minimum. But this is the big leagues, and strike throwing is what Kyle Snyder is all about, you know, and it has been. So they'll get it straightened out, I think. But like you said, one time through the rotation didn't exactly fire you up the way they did it. But now let's see what they do going through the second time. Meanwhile, you were at the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they played what is a really desperate Detroit team, and they played a lot of desperate teams lately. And let's be honest, when you've gotten points in 9 straight games, it's hard to do it in 10, then it's hard to do it in 11, right? A close game, one that I thought the Lightning had a lot of chances, and I think at one point I saw where they – had controlled the puck in their zone like maybe 8 minutes more than Detroit had. Be that as it may, they lose 3-2 or 4-2 with an empty netter, and the final the go-ahead goal coming probably with about 2:35, 2:40 somewhere in there in regulation. I thought that they might be able to drag it into overtime, get another point. That's kind of what it looked like, but I don't know. It was an uneven game, and there were some goals taken off the board. What'd you think of, you know, some of the calls that went against the Lightning?
I think both were the right calls. The first one, Sorelli charging towards the net on a breakaway, gets pushed from behind, loses an edge, shoots the puck, which the goalie stops, and then Sorelli hits the goalie, and the goalie and Sorelli and the puck all go in the net. Mm-hmm. They called it a goal on the ice and then discussed it and said that he pushed the pads in, essentially, to push the puck in. I thought it was the right call. And then the second one, Sorelli's on a shorthanded breakaway and shoots the puck, and it dribbling towards the line, at which point Alex Lyon takes his – he's on the left post but takes his right foot to try to – behind him and stop it. I think the puck went in, but there's no angle to show it, and it has
to
be –
they did not have an angle, no.
They have to see that the puck crossed the line, and it most likely did under his foot and skate.
Yeah.
But there was no angle, nowhere to see it. Like, and so you can't confirm that call. The official didn't call it a goal on the ice because he never saw the puck in the net, even though Sorelli was petitioning for it. You know, it's unfortunate because Sorelli played really well to that point, mm-hmm. and could have had two goals, ends up with none. Although on the next shift, he gets another shorthanded breakaway and he fired it right past Alex Lyon. And that looked like a determined guy. Like, you're not taking a third one away. I'm getting this goal. Like,
yeah.
And that tied the game there. I thought he played well. I thought the Lightning played well on Monday night. I thought they had some shifts where they problems from early in the year of how to get the puck out of your own zone crept in.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those mistakes made them pay. The game-winning goal was an unnecessary icing by Nick Perbix.
Yes.
That then the Red Wings put Glendening on his weak side. They won the faceoff, and the puck ends up in the net.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's those unforced errors that the Lightning made, I thought, crept into their game a little bit. Overall, yeah. I thought they played well. Probably deserved a win.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't make those mistakes. And, you know, you're playing a desperate team who's trying to force you into that. Detroit's a good team. They needed that win. They now control their own destiny for the playoffs at this point. If they win out, they're in. But, you know, it's unfortunate that the Lightning didn't win that game. But, you know, maybe it's that, hey, we got to get back to, you know, we can play 80% of the game well, but we make those mistakes in our own end. It's going to cost us. And it's a good chance to go, hey, we got to make sure we don't lose that. Like against Boston last week, you know, that was maybe their best game of the season defensively. You know, they didn't make those mistakes. They got the puck. It was out of their zone. They didn't mess around. They didn't make fancy passes. They didn't make bad turnovers. They got it out. And I thought some of that crept into their game at times on Monday night.
Yeah. No, I would agree. And you know, they made a nice job coming back and tying that game. Steven Stamkos tied it up. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that they were, like I said, going to at least get a point out of it, maybe win it. But, yeah, to your point, I mean, the teams that they've had to play and the ones that they've beaten are all teams that are still relevant in the playoff race, and they don't have any margin for error. So you're gonna get everyone's desperation punch every night.
And you're still 8-1-1 in your last 10 games.
Yeah, you're fine. You take that every single 10 games. I mean, there's no shame in that, even if you drop one at home. But
now your next game is at Toronto. That's not an easy game either.
No, and that has a kind of a two-way significance, right? Because
you're trying to run them down, although now you don't control your own destiny in that regard. Because Toronto won Monday, the Lightning lost, so they're now 6 points back, and they have two games to play against each other.
Right.
But the Lightning, at the end of the day, would you like to catch Toronto? Sure, great. They don't care. Like, as long as they're in the dance.
Yeah.
The magic number did drop from 8 to 7 because Philadelphia lost in overtime, so they dropped a point. So the magic number is now 7 for the Lightning with 8 right. games to play.
Still, they're going to make the playoffs. I mean,
yeah.
Who would you know? And look, you got to go through everybody to get this Stanley Cup. But who would their first round opponent be now?
Let me double check the standings. It would still be Boston if they Boston, started right
okay.
now.
Yep. Yeah.
The Rangers would get the Capitals, who are the wild card now. The Flyers are the third seed in the Metro, although the Capitals have 3 games in hand on them. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, right now it would be Boston versus the Lightning, but it still could be Florida. It still could be the Rangers. Still could be Carolina. Like, they pretty much have 4 possibilities at this point who they could play.
Right.
an outside shot, it could be Toronto in the first round, but that's doubtful. And an interesting story with the Lightning tonight, too. Have you ever heard of the E-Bug?
No.
The emergency backup goalie.
Is that the third goalie?
Jonas Johansson has a lower body injury, and they didn't have another goalie nearby, so Kyle Konen suited up and was the backup goalie tonight for the Lightning. Did not get in the game.
Now, what does Kyle typically do for the Lightning?
He is the emergency backup goalie. He's at every game.
So that's his designation, is to be the emergency backup goalie.
Yes.
Doesn't have another role in the organization, per se?
No. He is the backup goalie. He comes to some practices at times when one of the goalies isn't going to be there or they need an extra goalie. He's at every game. If you remember a few years ago, he did suit up for St. Louis during a Lightning game at home.
I do remember that, yeah.
They had a scratch a goalie, and so they needed someone. So he suited up, didn't play as well. But for the first time ever, the Lightning had to suit up a E-Bug goalie.
That's one of the, I don't know, odd isn't probably the right word, but it's a story anytime those guys play, you know what I mean? And they all have great stories to be designated that, much less play. And if they win, it's even more rare.
So they called him this morning or on Monday morning and said, hey, you know, you're going to need to suit up today, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, nerves and excited and, you know. And then he texts his family group chat, and his dad said, it is April Fool's. Are you sure?
Ha ha. You're right. Wow. That is not the time to be getting good news or bad.
Yeah,
really.
And he goes, I'm really bad with calendars, so I didn't realize it. And then I'm like, that would be really cruel if they did that to me.
Somebody was playing a prank on me. Yeah.
But it was not a joke. It was not an April Fool's joke. So he did suit up for the Lightning, but it was funny. I was talking to some people that are kind of new to hockey. And we're like, why is it such a big story every time the E-Bug? It's like, what other sport takes a random guy from the stands and says, hey, you're in the game?
And I don't get that.
You're right.
Can you not afford just to, you know, carry three gold? You never need them necessarily, but, you know.
Well, but I guess I can take it both ways. So can you afford to carry a goalie? Sure. Could you know, but it's going to take another roster position, et cetera. But who wants to be the third goalie?
No. Well, I don't know. No, but if you're good, you want to play. You want to be in Syracuse or someplace else. You want to be playing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the point being that they find these guys anyway. I don't know. You're right. Maybe they wouldn't upgrade their quality. Anywho,
I remember Phyllis Mazzito and Bobby the Chief Taylor. Of course, Chief was a goalie back in the day. They didn't have backup goalies. Like, if you got hurt, they brought in the essential E-Bug or your trainer or whoever was supposed to be the goalie. Like, someone on staff was basically the backup.
Hmm.
Like, when they played, there was no backup goalie.
The number two was that person?
The number two was your trainer, your equipment guy, although those were all kind of the same guys back then.
Yeah.
Not later in their career there was, but this is when they first got called up and stuff, that there was no backups.
Yeah.
Like there was an E-Bug back then, and it was the second goalie.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Every now and then you'll see a guy that has another position in the organization. He might be a trainer or equipment guy or whatever. You'll see him that where he works there, but he's the emergency backup.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen like in practice, you'll see like Franjean, the goalie coach, play goalie occasionally.
No, is that right?
He's not the emergency goalie, but he'll in a practice sometimes he'll go out there and you know if Vasilevskiy's taking a body maintenance day or your Johansson or the backup is or you know you'll see that a lot or a lot of times sometimes in the rehab sessions and stuff after practice when the guys who are hurt are maybe skating and doing some stuff but it's such a unique position. You could almost consider doing it in football for a kicker. Who was it in the playoffs that kicker got hurt in?
Happens.
It happens
from time to time.
They were going for two instead because they didn't have they couldn't kick it. I can't remember which team it was now in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But it's such a unique position.
Right. We saw that happen to the Bucks against the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Their kicker got hurt during the game, and they let
that's
their
what
running,
I was thinking. That's what
they
it was when the
they let their
yeah,
running back Adari Agumbawale, who used that's to right. play for the Bucks, he actually kicked. I want to say a field goal, not just mm-hmm. an extra point, but an actual field goal, I think. But it was at least the 33-yard variety from a distance. And then I think one time they may have gone for two. But, yeah, I mean, that also occurs. Now, you can't have them active, but typically if you know you might have an injury situation, most teams carry a kicker on the practice squad these days.
Well, and football has a practice squad where –
They do. They have 16 players.
Yeah, because there's no minor league football system. That's why they have practice squads.
That's right. Yeah.
Baseball, those players, someone gets hurt, those players are in your AAA team.
Right.
And, and in theory, that's what the NHL hopes to do. But if there's not enough time to get a goalie somewhere.
Yeah.
Depending on what happens and where your minor league team is at.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. It's always fun. When those guys play, I don't know which team it was. I want to say the Rangers, but there was one a year or so ago where that third goalie won a game. And
Carolina. It was in Toronto.
Carolina? Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was for Carolina. Yeah, that was a couple years ago now. But, yeah, that's those stories are.
Storybook, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, Kyle Konen's now, suited up twice at Amalie Arena, hasn't gotten into either game, but.
Yeah.
We had a question. Someone asked, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm like, do they get a full day's minimum salary for the NHL for that day? I don't know how that works. Or if it, I don't know what they're getting paid to do what they do, but.
Yeah.
Do they get more? Is it a bonus? I'm curious how that works. I guess I got to figure that out.
Yeah. I'm sure they take care of them in some manner. It is a union after all, I think. I'm sure it's collectively bargained.
The e-bug is definitely collectively bargained, but how it works and how that,
Yeah, what are the mechanics of it? Well, it was a competitive game. It was fun to watch. It was unfortunate to give up a goal there with under 3 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
Unable to drag that one into overtime, although they had some looks. Stamkos had a look with a one-man advantage when they pulled Vasilevsky, and then they got the empty netter. So I thought for a minute they were even going to tie it up there at the very end. But they just weren't able to do so. Okay, this is how I spent my night because the Rays, I guess, were an option, although they weren't on Spectrum, at least the one that I had. I think maybe the app had it. I'm not sure. But
yes, the app had everything. Bally Sports Sun had the Lightning. I think Bally Sports Florida should have had the Rays.
Is that what it was? Bally's Florida? Okay. And I didn't get a chance to watch them. I could have. Could have put them all on. But
Sounds like you didn't miss anything.
Yeah, no. When I saw that they were down 3-0 after about three hitters, I was like, "Whoa, let's see how this one. Let's see if they get back in it." And they never really did.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for, but you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What I watched is the second game in a row in the NCAA tournament, women's tournament. Between Iowa and LSU. And let me tell you, last year, I think the ratings, and it was in the Final Four when they met the last time, the ratings were, I think there were 10 million people watched that game.
Yeah. No, that was the national championship.
Was it the championship? Okay.
Yeah, they met in the national championship last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, that stands to reason you're going to get a bigger audience and all of that. But this did not disappoint. I mean, to have that much hype for a game. And we all remember, kind of how it went with Caitlin Clark, being the kind of the marquee player in that matchup. But I'll tell you, man, the level of basketball in women's basketball these days is so much further and enhanced than it has been maybe any time in its existence. And you got to credit all those that came before them that have made this game what it is today. And there's been a lot of great players, obviously, through the years. But, man, you know, to see Clark go out there and, you know, I think in the third quarter, because they played quarters, she made 4 3-pointers, I believe. They went 94-87, and she had 41 points, 12 assists, 7 rebounds. And just every time she goes out there, she's breaking a record. Of course, she was the most outstanding player. But to have a chance to send her team back to the Final Four, where they lost, you know, a year ago, 102-85 to the same LSU team, it was good theater. And of course, we haven't talked about all the stories on LSU coach Kim Mulkey and all of that, both in the Washington Post, the LA Times. The LA Times writer apologized for what he wrote in the run up to this game, the previous game.
And I wasn't sure. I wasn't so sure. I'm trying to figure out what Kim Mulkey was so upset about that the Washington Post was going to write.
I don't get it either. You know, she thought they were doing a hit piece on her, quote unquote, and she had heard about it for weeks, and she tried to get out in front of this story. And sometimes when you do that, you make it a bigger story. And when I finally read it, it was a profile, not necessarily a flattering profile, but a lot of stuff we kind of knew, with the exception of sort of the strife that she has in her own family.
Yeah, I mean, most of it was stuff that you've already heard or read or seen, or
yeah,
there was really not much new in there.
No, I don't know that I'd be thrilled about it if I were her, you know, the way they portrayed her. But a lot of that is true. You know, she is one of the more intense and you know, not necessarily warm and fuzzy coaches in college basketball, but then again, all she does is win.
Yeah, it's not like she doesn't know that, and it's not like everybody else doesn't already know that.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So temperament wise, we knew that. I mean, there were some, you know, quotes from players, and I guess, you know, she has sort of a don't kiss, don't tell, if you will, policy on sexual orientation and stuff like that. But I think, you know, I think by her drawing attention to it, it probably made it a bigger story than it needed to be. And, you know, I will say this, that the writer, you know, what caused this is in the confirmation that a story was coming out, was that after trying to get her for 2 years, the writer wrote a series of questions, you know, one last Hail Mary to try to get her to respond to this story. And when he submitted those, she was like, "Can you believe it? You know, I get a list of questions, and this, you know, of all times we're in the tournament and this is coming out." It's like, well, you know, you really had 2 years to respond if you'd chosen to. But be that as it may, I mean, look, I saw, and I've said this before on this podcast, my first introduction to women's basketball was when Kim Mulkey was the ponytailed point guard for Louisiana Tech. My first road trip in college basketball, we didn't know what to do on a Saturday night in Ruston, Louisiana, right? I mean, what do you do? And so everybody said, well, it was kind of a dumb question when we asked. They're like, "Oh, you gotta go. There's a basketball game tonight." We're like, "Oh, I thought the men playing." "No, you have to go because the women are playing." We're like, "Wait a minute, why would we want to go see women's basketball? Oh, you haven't seen this women's basketball team." And so we went, and it was a damn sellout. You know, there's probably, I don't know, 10,000 to 12,000 people in that arena. And Kim Mulkey was a, you know, dive on the floor, blood and guts leader of that basketball team. And she played the way she coaches, you know, just very aggressive, in your face. Talk about a trash talker. She had plenty of that. And she was one of the smaller players on the court. And so I've seen sort of what she was about as a player. And then she played on the national team and things like that. And, of course, we know what she did at Baylor and with Brittany Griner. So, yeah, there wasn't a lot. And like I said, I think the writer for the LA Times who covers UCLA and was enamored by, you know, the contrast of those two programs, and particularly the coaches, who are kind of opposites on the way they go about their jobs in terms of access and different things. You know, at one point he called LSU players dirty debutantes. And I'm all for alliteration. No one uses it more than me, maybe. That's not a flattering term, and probably one that's very unfair. And so he wrote sort of a 5-paragraph apology, you know, for what was, you know, crossing the line. But be that as it may, as far as on the court, LSU plays really, really hard, and Iowa played hard. And this game wasn't sloppy. It wasn't a turnover fest. You know, you had the two superstars of the sport, Angel Reese from LSU, you know, and Clark, who I think has changed the college game. And so with Clark moving on to the WNBA, I mean, this is, you know, the last chance we'll see him playing college basketball. But, you know, Iowa really brought it to him in the third quarter. They shot the ball better. They out-rebounded him. And, you know, the 41 points, of course. The where she shoots the ball, I mean, she has the range of an NBA player. You mm-hmm. know, she'll cross the logo and it could go up.
Yep.
You know, and she makes them. It's just incredible. And she has a handle. She puts the ball on the floor. She can drive the ball. She sets up her teammates all the time.
Well, that's why she gets as many points as she does.
Absolutely.
Because you can't just defend her. Like,
right.
She's a tremendous passer and sets mm-hmm. up her teammates. Like, that's what yeah. the great ones do. Like,
yeah.
Like, you make your teammates better around you, it makes you better.
No doubt.
It gives you more opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, I think of Michael Jordan in some of the biggest moments of his career, you know, passing the ball to Steve Kerr, right? John Paxton and stuff like that. So she's that type of player, unstoppable, essentially. And it was a close game for almost three quarters. And then eventually Iowa pulled away because of the three-pointers, because Caitlin hit four of those, I think, in the third quarter. And that kind of built a 12-point lead that they're unable to overcome. So, but yeah, shout out to Caitlin Clark, to Angel Reese, two superstar players that have elevated the women's college game to a level that, you know, it has mass appeal. You know, I think there was a time when people thought, well, it's an inferior product; they don't play the game above the rim. You know what? And some don't still, but it's pure. And it is basketball the way we know it. The ability to share the ball, run the floor, play defense, and then the shooting has been the biggest change, I think, is just someone like Clark that can, you know, do everything with the ball in her power, create her own shot, and of course, make threes like, you know, like Stephon Curry. I mean, it's really fun to see. So I enjoyed – that was my – guilty pleasure. I had the Lightning game on. Wasn't interested in the Rays game because I saw they fell behind right away. But that was, to me, that was much CTV. And of course, you know, you got UConn going back. What is it? South Carolina going back, I think.
Mm-hmm. And NC State. UConn, NC State in both Final Fours.
How about that? Yeah. Wow. What an incredible time for those athletic departments to be able to put men's and women's teams in the Final Four. It's just really something else. So fun watching. We still got, you know, obviously the Final Four for the men, Final Four now for the women. That's going to be coming up. So lots to talk about with that.
Get your mailbag questions.
Yeah. Those aren't rolling in as much. You guys out of gas here? Like, what's going on? We still have more free agency ahead of us. The Lightning certainly are on their playoff. Trying to clinch a spot in the playoffs. It looks like they will. The Tampa Bay Rays, what do you think of them for the first, I don't know, one time through the five-man rotation? Love to get your thoughts on that. Love to discuss that. You can submit those on Twitter at SportsDayTB. That's our Twitter handle. Or you can do that to my Twitter handle at NFL Stroud. Or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. We got room for plenty of those this week. There's a rumor and only a rumor. Should I make it public and shame them into doing it? What do you think?
Yeah, go for it.
I think that we might have, back and better than ever, Rick and Tom, if you can imagine that, by the end
of the
week.
The Rays are losing. He is spring-loaded for criticism.
Well, he is spring-loaded for negativity, and he can't see his TV from his couch, but I think maybe he's been watching a little bit of sports, and I always want to get his take on what's going on in the world of sports. So we might have a little fun and frivolity with that over the next few days during the week. So anyway, keep it right here. And then, of course, any news with the Buccaneers, they've announced their off-season schedule. You can go to TampaBay.com and read about that. And before you know it, man, we'll be into the of course, the NFL draft is less than 30 days away. We're going to have a rookie mini camp after that, and then OTAs begin, and then there'll be a veteran mini camp. And all I know is the important date here is June 13th, and that's the last day of the veteran mandatory minicamp when we can all say, take a breath and wait until, you know, the end of July comes when we do it all over again. So lots coming up as far as the Bucks and their draft goes. We'll have a lot of stuff in TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times about that. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.